Well, our moms think we're funny.
Yeah, so, I mean, the superhero stuff, it's just, it's weird.
Oh, yeah, yeah, this stuff is super weird. Yeah, I mean,
it's like, it's clear that the guy's got a very strong fetish for, I don't want to say non-consent, but I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, I guess he feels like that there's a market out here for this, and we're watching it, but we're not the audience for this.
We're
watching
not the target demographic.
Yeah, like, we're not watching it because we really want to see it. We're watching it because, like, it's just like, this is just strange. But then he's also not going full out either. Like,
yeah.
It's like, what is your ultimate, like, thing here?
It's like, personally, I would feel more comfortable with, like, consensual full nude penetration versus clothed non-consensual finger banging. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the whole, like, oh, she's not in control here thing is extremely uncomfortable to me.
Yeah, it's... And
oh, here, fuck! We didn't do the Book of Jacob!
Book of Jacob?
Yeah! That review you sent me? For the Let's Watch? The smartest little kid in the world? And the reviewer wrote, like, the super funny thing?
Oh, shit, yeah! The Book of Jacob! Oh. Yeah.
Shit, that was gonna be a Let's Watch, we forgot about it!
Damn it.
Shit! It's probably not free to stream anyway.
It is. Oh man, that article is so good.
So well written. Look, the bad news is now that he's dead, he's not the smartest person in the land anymore. Now that honor falls on Naomi Watts, and Naomi Watts is an idiot. This is a really good fancy dessert.
Yeah, I will say something about this chick that I don't like is she kind of some points looks like I don't like the way those things are hanging out, but it sometimes looks like Alicia Silverstone, and I can't stand Alicia Silverstone. I want to get beaten by an Alicia Silverstone. Like I always would say things that I want people to get beaten up. I really don't want people to get beaten up. You know, that's just
how I do.
I mean, some people, like, I don't like Alicia Silverstone, but I don't want her to be, like, beaten necessarily, you know? Like, if she were to trip on her own and fall down the stairs, I'd laugh, you know? But I wouldn't want someone to push her.
No, every time I hear that one of the Paul brothers got into another boxing match, I just pray that they got the ever-loving shit beat out of them.
Oh, yeah, that's completely different, yeah. I mean, yeah, I can definitely, like, stand behind that.
Yeah, this guy's got a humiliation kink. That's all it is.
Yeah, but why superheroes? Like,
because they're so powerful. It's powerful women being humiliated and degraded and non-conned.
I guess. Okay, so. So I was saying right before we came back was the whole thing about Usual Suspects, you know, like I said, which I love, but there are people out there that don't like the Usual Suspects, and they say things like, you know, the story doesn't make any sense, it's so dumb, it doesn't make any sense, it doesn't line up, like all the if it's something, I'm like, what about it doesn't line up? It's like everything lines up perfectly, it's all there, it makes perfect sense, it all lines up, and they're like, no, it doesn't. And I'm like, sure it does. Like, well, this thing, and I can't say exactly what it is that they disagree with because I'm not stupid. Because
they'll know.
Huh?
Because they'll know that they're who you're talking about.
I don't give a shit. I mean, stupid people that think they know that I'm talking about them are really too stupid to know I'm talking about them. So, I mean, it's fine with me. I don't care.
Fair enough.
You know? I can't slow my brain down that much to think that way.
But
they're like, you know, it doesn't make sense, doesn't line up. I'm just like, sure it does. Because when you watch, I mean, it's been a while since you've seen it, right?
Yeah.
You've probably seen it, once?
Once.
Okay. So, of course, I've seen it numerous times.
Yeah.
No,
I've seen it twice.
Okay. So, What do we know about, what do we know about the guys that, the crew that, that, you know, that are killed on the dock and that Verbal's a part of?
Oh man, dude, it has been way too long. I don't remember.
Okay.
Now, any of it.
That's fair. So what do we know about them? Well, we know that they were all arrested that one night and then let go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course, Benicio del Toro's Finster, and he's like, I had a finger up my ass, and he goes, and then he goes, is it Tuesday already? He's like, what? Oh. So we know that they all got, that they were all arrested and brought in for the lineup, and then they were all released.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Keaton we know where they were all arrested from. They were all released. Later on, they hit the New York's Finest taxi service.
Right, right.
So we know that happened. And then they flew out to LA. We know that, they flew out to LA. We know that, the majority of them died on the boat except for Verbal,
mm-hmm.
who lived because he was hiding because, according to him, Keaton told him to hide.
Right, right.
What else do we know?
I'm way too far from seeing this movie to remember a lot about it.
Okay. So we know that Keaton's girlfriend, the lawyer Edie Finneran, we know she's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And she was killed in the hotel room somewhere, whatever. She left New York, came out to LA, and then when she left there, she actually stopped over some other place, some other, like, town or city, and she was killed.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we know.
Right, right.
Oh, we know there was no coke in that boat. And that guy, Hamintosh or whatever, right, he says that Kaiser Sose was there. That's all we know. At least all we know for a fact.
Right, right.
Everything else we know all comes from Verbal.
Mm-hmm.
Because the only we know those other things are fact because we know that the lineup, the police are there to corroborate that. We know that they hit the New York taxi cab service because they disabled the cabin and set it on fire.
Right, right, right.
So we know that. We know they went out to L.A. because you can prove they were all out because they all died in L.A., right?
Right, right.
And we know that they died on the boat because they found their bodies in the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And they fished the other ones out of the harbor. And Verbal's there.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else, you have no idea if any of that stuff is true or not. It's all what Verbal's telling you.
Yeah.
So, it doesn't line up? Sure it does. Because everything else about the story is complete bullshit.
Right, right.
You don't know if any of those events took place the way he said they did. That, like, and so you say, well, what about, Kobayashi? You know, there's a guy, you know, that's played by the late Pete Postlethwaite. You know his name is Kobayashi. Well, you know his name's not Kobayashi because it's on the bottom of the cup.
Right, right.
And you only know that guy exists because we see Verbal, well, we see the, Kaiser Soze get in the car with him afterwards.
Right.
But we don't know his name. We don't know where he came from. We don't know that he ever met with him. We don't even know if E. Finneran met with him.
Right.
None
right.
of that. So we mean it doesn't line up. Sure it does. Because everything else you know all comes from Verbal, and we know that he's making shit up.
Right, right.
And it's beautiful. I mean, the story he weaves is beautiful. Even everything what he says about Kaiser Sose, mm-hmm. like, and how that worked, you don't even know if that's true because, again, Kaiser Sose is a spook, you know, like a story, like, you know. So everything he makes up right there does not necessarily mean that that's it. And even to solidify that, when we get the sketch and it comes in over the facts, right?
Mm-hmm.
From the guy who describes it, the Turkish guy that describes it to the police.
Right.
And it comes in over the facts. And we see this Verbal Kent. We see that Verbal, the guy who calls himself Verbal, is Kaiser Sose, right?
Right, right.
So we know that's him. There's no doubt, right, that he is Kaiser Sose.
Right, yeah.
And the story he tells about Kaiser, what does he look like?
I can't remember what he says.
He's like a swarthy Eastern European guy with long flowing black hair.
Oh yeah.
Which looks nothing like him. So even the guy he describes in the story doesn't look like him. So we don't even know that the story that he told about Kaiser is true. Of course, nobody knows. He's like, you know, the story I heard is this.
Right, right.
It's so good.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's brilliant about it, and what people don't like to... Well, what people who are criticizing the movie don't like to think about is that, like, that's the best way to lie, is that you're peppering in a little bit of truth, a little bit of lies, some things that are just slightly, like, incorrect information, some things that are outright fabrication.
Right.
So, like, of course it's not going to line up as a perfectly factual movie, because it's the story of a man telling a lie.
Exactly. And he's giving, like, and, like, he knows, like, even when Agent Kuyan's there, he's like, you know, I know you just tell me what I want to hear. He goes, but you know, like, you're not going to win this because I'm smarter than you. And so he's like, yeah, I'm telling what you want to hear. So I'm going to pretend that I'm lying to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Purposely lying to you. Then I'm going to tell you what you think you want to hear is the truth. You want to believe that Dean Keaton was crooked because you've been after him a long time because he used to be a cop and then he went crooked, but then he was trying to get his life straight. You want to hear these crooked, so fine. I'm going to spin you this tale where in the end of it, Dean Keaton is crooked. But I'm not going to tell you that. I'm going to still try to pretend that he's good because if I tell you that, yes, he was bad, you're not going to believe it.
Right, right.
So I'm going to continue to try to plead his innocence, knowing that no matter what, you're going to believe he's crooked. And I've given you enough ambiguity to where you can say, yeah, okay, like you can dispel everything I said about all that.
Right, right.
And then everything else, because I'm telling you basically what you want to hear, everything else just fits that narrative.
Right, yeah.
It's so great.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I hate when people try to say that a story that is told through, like, a first-person narration has those types of flaws, where it's like, first-person narration is limited to the narrator.
I was having the same conversation with somebody, and I was like, this is what I hate about first-person storytelling. And I call it lazy writing. And I'm not trying to put anybody down that does it that way. I'm really not trying to put anybody down that does it that way. But I say it's lazy writing because when you're doing a story from the first person, everything that you feel about all the other characters is based upon what that person tells you.
Yeah,
so if that
yeah.
person tells you they're a crook, you believe they're a crook. If they tell you this person's a good guy, they're a good guy. And you never get an outside opinion of that.
Right.
So that's how you always feel because that's what the narrator is telling you. But the narrator is not unbiased.
Right. Yeah.
So the thing is, as a writer, you don't have to go through the process of setting up a background, getting other people to give their perspective on that so that the reader can really figure out for themselves who they believe. Or if you need the reader to feel a certain way by presenting it through multiple different people's like perspectives to show that this person, so if I got three people that all say they were a crook and they explain to you like their feelings because they were cheated by them,
right,
then you'll
right.
get the feeling that they're a crook, right?
Right, yeah.
If you want them to kind of feel that maybe not be, then like what two people feel that way, the third person won't. So it's like, I'm not quite sure. If you go the other way, two people like think that he's a good guy, one person thinks he's a crook, then you kind of discount that one person because like, well, you're overruled here. Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But me just telling you all that, it's too damn easy. All right. I have to do is just say that Joe Hero here says he's a bad guy, and that's it. Well, why Joe Hero thinks he's a bad guy? Oh, because one time he was caught in a lie. Well, you think it's a lie, but right. we don't even know that you had all the information. Or maybe actually the whole time you're the bad guy.
Yeah, you see, I think that's what makes for an interesting challenge with first person is that it can be lazy, but like part of the challenge there is you have to bring in things that the first person narrator is not aware of. So like to use the example of he's convinced this person's a bad guy because he was caught in a lie. Like, I think it becomes, like, pretty tantamount to the story that character who he's convinced is a liar comes through and is, like, central in like, saving his ass at some point in the story.
Mm-hmm. Now, and you can get something like that. Like, if you have, like, what you were just saying, like, the person that he doesn't trust saves his ass, right? And then it's like, And then he says, well, you know, well, yeah, he saved me, but I still think he's a crook.
Like, yeah, yeah.
He just, the only reason he saved me was trying to get me to change my opinion of him. Not because he really was trying to save my life. Well, that makes me feel a little different about the narrator. About the,
right,
you know,
right.
And, but again, you have to set up that way. If you don't set it up that way, right, then anything that person says, you're taking as the God's honest truth.
Right, right.
And,
yeah.
And like I said, I think that's so lazy because you don't really have to, you don't have to really, really flesh out any of these people on their own.
Yeah.
You just, just one guy to flesh out everybody just by them saying, I think they're this.
Right, right. Yeah. I think like not making your first person narrator wrong on some fronts is the same as just like not giving your characters any flaws.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, nobody wants to read about a character who doesn't have any flaws. Nobody wants to read about a first person narrator who like is omniscient. And can be like, oh yeah, you know, this guy responded in an angry voice because he knew I'd caught him in the act or something. Like, you don't want to go with that. Like, the most your character can do is speculate.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, when we talk about, like, these people that write things on Reddit and everything, they come at it and they say, like, no, this happened, blah, 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 right? And it's like, well, but you're telling me the story from in this way because you want me to agree with you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, and you see that, but people do that all the time in like their Facebook posts and or like whatever social media posts they are. Mm-hmm. They slant it a certain way to get you to believe them and side with them, which isn't necessarily, they're not lying to you, but they may not be presenting all the facts. You know?
It's called poisoning the well. It's a real shitty thing to do.
It is.
It's like, my grandpa, who I saw kicking a puppy once when I was 5, has this opinion. I think he's wrong. What do you guys think? Well, now everybody's already convinced that grandpa is a puppy kicker.
Right.
So they're already inclined to disagree with his opinion. It's just, it's a shitty way to be, and you're not working based off of facts or logic. You're going based off of emotion.
And things, we don't even know if you're telling the truth. I don't know if you have a grandpa. I don't know if you kicked a puppy. I don't know any of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But, because you're the one telling me the story, and you're the only person whose voice I know, I kind of have to believe you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if I don't, then why am I even reading the damn story?
Mm-hmm. It's like, I hate that shit, and I hate how they just pepper in totally unnecessary details.
Yes.
It's like, my grandpa also had psoriasis and a 3-inch dick. It's like, oh, A, I don't know how you knew any of that, and B, I didn't want to know that.
Yeah.
Like, all you're doing is just, like, making the person you're in an argument with look worse.
I hate when someone's telling a story, and then they start putting, like, it's okay if you put your emotions into it. Like, and we said that, like, it really shattered, you know, or shattered my belief or, like, made me feel, like, X way, right? I get that, because otherwise you're like, oh, well, it didn't really hurt you then. Like, they said it didn't bother you.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't care if you want to be like, oh, yep, that upset me.
But it's when they get so detailed in the emotions, they're like they, you know, they did this and everything, and it's just like, I cried for weeks, or and it's like, okay, first off, you didn't cry for weeks, you know, or
I haven't eaten in 5 days.
Like, when they said that and everything, it's like, it was like I've been like punched in the stomach and my legs started to shake and I didn't feel like I could stand. I got lightheaded. Like, oh, come on. Like, shit, dude.
It felt like I was a superhero who was captured by bad guys and they just started punching me in the vagina over and over.
And that's when I would just respond, so you enjoyed it. So, see you again next Tuesday.
Yeah, I would hate to live in this world where it's like, we have superheroes. They suck. They're terrible at their job. All they ever do is get raped. Like, it's been a 2-day period and we've had 4 superheroes get raped.
You know, yeah, I would quit. So let's say I was a superhero in this world, right? And I'm like, and my name is like, Black Star Sunrise. And, you know, I've got powers of like the nuclear powers that come from like, the sunspots or whatever. And I get, you know, I get, you know, like beaten by like the, I like my arch nemesis or whatever. We got the kind of like people like think that there's something like maybe like a will they won't they thing between them, but you know, like it's like a Batman Catwoman thing, right?
Right, right.
And then like I don't know, like boom surprise or whatever, right? Like she finds my weakness and then captures me, then bends me over and like pegs me like for like a week, you know, like she does it. I'm all chained up, does it, and instead of like when she's done pulling out, she just unstraps and leaves it there, and then comes back and just straps back on. And then when I finally get free, and then like next time I encounter her, like we're in public and I kill her, and you're like, whoa, like, you know, like what the hell happened to him? Like he's gone dark. And then we go to court and I'm like, now I've got to tell everybody, like, well, the reason I did that is cause like she trapped me. She beat me, and then she anally raped me for a week. Yeah, good luck saving the rest of the city, because right, no yeah. one is gonna feel comfortable with that afterward. Like you've just like, for some reason, people have lost all faith in you for that. Not because you killed her, but because you showed an incredible amount of weakness to them.
Yeah.
Even though they've said like you're a victim, like this is a person that shouldn't be a victim, because in case superhero, like you're above everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Like if it was a cop that had been like caught by a butt, like a gang and, you know, and like molested or raped or whatever, we can feel sorry for them and still like let them back on the force and feel like, yeah, you're doing a hero thing because you're just like us.
Right.
You're not human though anymore. You're superhuman. Like I put you up to a higher standard than that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if something like that happens to you, like I kind of feel like that shouldn't happen to you, because like if we've got the military and the military does this and you're better than them, like you shouldn't be subject to the same, like, the same vulnerabilities they are.
Right, right.
So now I'm like, So, like, thank you for stopping the bank from being robbed. So let me ask you, like,
how's that ass feel?
Like, you're bulletproof, except for that little asshole, huh? Right?
So, you know those classic, like, Ditko covers and Burns covers where it's like, Spider-Man no more?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's been done 100 million times now at this point, where it's like, it's the spider suit in the trash can,
mm-hmm.
and he's like walking away. So what we do is we do a cover of, like, Black Sunrise Supreme, no more, and he's like walking away with his costume in the alley, but he just has like no pants on and his anus is bleeding.
I guess costumes in the alley and sitting on the ground next to the trash can is like the strap on.
Yeah, the dilemma. Just covered in blood.
So I thought about this the other day too, and I was thinking, you were talking about like all those homage covers.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, homage covers.
Yeah.
I wonder how it feels when a cover you did for a book, a standard cover, somehow takes on, becomes an homage cover. Like, you didn't plan any of that stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But when it becomes an homage cover, like, how's that make you feel? Like, cause it's, I mean, it's one thing, like when McFarlane did the Amazing Spider-Man 300, it's Spider-Man in a circle.
Yeah.
There's nothing
yeah.
special about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But because of Spider-Man 300, people started doing that homage cover. The, Cyclops leaving the X-Men where he's walking towards the reader with the duff bag over his shoulder, and everyone else standing there watching him go.
Yep.
Homage cover. Again, there was nothing special about that. Like, all those things, the Dave Cockrum lineup of like the X-Men versus like the other team, right? They're about to fight with Professor Xavier standing by. Like,
yep, yep.
Like, it's one thing.
One where the hero is holding the heroine dead and is crying in front of the big crowd.
Yeah, the Crisis on Infinite Earths,
Death of Supergirl, or yep, whatever. Yeah. I couldn't remember if it was like the Supergirl thing or the X-Men thing that came first, but yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, that's been like tributed so many times.
Well, I guess technically, it's the, we'll see, Cyclops holding Jean, but he's not.
See, I don't even know if those are like a tribute to each other or not.
Well, Crisis came much later, but. See, I'm trying to think. So, The issue that Gene actually dies doesn't have that cover. It's got him, it's got, the two of them fighting in the alcove on the blue area of the moon. And he's like, and she's using telekinesis. He's like, you know, like shooting his optic blast. The next cover, cause she's dead at that. So you wouldn't have that on the next cover. The next cover is the funeral scene. And that's got that's the one where he's walking away.
Gotcha, gotcha.
So the one of him holding her is not a death of Jean Grey scene. It's, I'm trying to think what X-Men issue that is. It's a burn, I know that. It's a post-Phoenix Force cover. Shit, I can't even think now. But anyway, the covers are like, they did the cover and, and then somehow they're like, oh, I'm gonna reference this.
Yep.
And then it becomes that thing.
Yep. Yep.
It's different if it's like Amazing Fantasy 15, Fantastic Four number one, cause you're going back to that beginning book, right?
Yeah.
That's one thing. But when it's just like, and sometimes they're not even like iconic issues. It's just like, here's a regular issue in the series. And
sometimes I wonder how covers get so popular, because you've got like that really, really famous Wolverine miniseries cover where it's just like that close up of his head.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like beckoning with his claws out. And it's like, that's a cool cover, but I don't understand how that's like any better than like there's way more in-depth covers to my mind.
Well, you know that Wallcrawler loves that Frank Miller Dark Knight Batman hunched over.
Oh yeah, that I was going to bring that one up next. Like that's a real classic one. Even Dave Sims referenced that.
Yeah,
like that's a real real famous cover too. But that's also a very sparse one. There's like not really background or anything to it. So it's like yeah, that's pretty. It's pretty interesting the ones that have become iconic.
Because you do wonder like how like. I think sometimes like one person does it because they just like that. They just like that cover.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, that'd be really cool. Or maybe they like the art or something about that they like. And then when they do that, someone else sees that and they're like, oh, you made reference to this thing. Like, that's cool. And then that's like, hey, that, you know, like, I wouldn't do that. And I don't think people go looking for it. It's just that one that's on their mind.
Yeah.
And then there it is.
I think a lot of times it's just when, you know, especially with like a monthly book, you got tight deadlines. So there's only so much shit that can go wrong in a single book. So if you have a day where it's like, let's just assume that you're doing 20 pages in a month. That's 4 weeks of 5 business day weeks.
Yeah.
So you can't afford to like have a page where you fuck up and have to start over.
And that's provided that when you send your stuff in to the editor, he's like, yeah, that's good. Or it doesn't make you do like a page over again.
Yeah. So like that's assuming you don't have any major like redos or re-edits. That's assuming that like you don't like that, like when you submit your thumbnails that you don't have him say, okay, you're going to need to change page 4, 5, and 6. So it's like, yeah, if you're expecting to pencil more than one page a day, that's the only way you're going to be able to get done anything besides that book. So let's assume that, like, by some miracle, you have a couple of days with easy pages, you get done in 3 or 4 days. Now you've got 3 or 4 days to pencil your cover. Okay. You better hope and pray that nothing goes wrong.
Right.
So, like, I totally get it. You have one book where it's like, shit, my pencils aren't playing nice. There's a lot of humidity in the air and it's fucking up the artboard. Like, it's all stuff that, like, has happened to me. I get it. I've seen it. Or it's like, yeah, this eraser has been perfectly fine every other day, but for some reason, it's just holding the lead differently, and as soon as I try to erase, I'll smear all my pencils across the page. Whatever. There's, like, 100 million things that can go wrong. So, when you've had a huge month, and you have busted ass trying to get these pencils absolutely perfect, and get them, like, when you're working on a Marvel book, get them clear enough for the inker to be able to ink without issue.
Right.
Then, yeah, when it comes time to do the cover, I can totally see being like, I can come up with something fresh where I can just swipe this Joe Rubenstein.
And, you know, the sad thing is that the editors, like, the cover is just as important as everything else, too. So, like, if you do, like, I want to look like this. And I don't know. I was looking at this before. I'm going to show you this real quick because I thought this was kind of interesting. And you know, like in right now in the with digital drawing, it's so easy to go back and correct something if you do something wrong, right?
Yeah.
Or I want to reposition this or something. Like it's so easy to do that. But you know, before we had digital, if you made a mistake, like sometimes you'd have to just white it out or do something like that. So I recently got in this book, everyone. It's The Art of Art of Arthur Adams, and it was this by Flesk Publishing. Wow, I had a hard time speaking today. And it was a Kickstarter book, but you know you can buy it as well now. It just came out, and really really good. Of course I Kickstarted it. Oh, did you see this page right here? With the
giant,
you know, that's right up your alley.
Yes, it is. A lot of what Art Adams does is right up my alley. Monkey Man and O'Brien is right up my alley. I've never read a full story of it, but like I love the characters.
You know they actually came out with the Monkey Man and O'Brien action figures, right?
I seem to remember hearing something about that.
It was during the time when, was it Kenner? I'm trying to think of like, not Playmates. It wasn't Jack Specific. Actually, I can't even think of the toy line now that did it, but they had done like some alternative like hero, like did like one wave of them. So they had Judge Death, what's my guy, Panda, and the other girl. Should I got them right up here? What am I doing? I'm trying to think about it. Because I've got my Body Bags action figures right up here.
Oh, yeah.
The Legendary Comic Heroes. So you had Panda and Clownface from Body Bags. They did Judge Death. And then they did Monkey Man and O'Brien, too.
Nice.
So, which I remember going into Walmart and seeing those. I'm like, this is different. Like, who knows these characters, right? Like, that's kind of bizarre that they would make action figures off of them. But I scooped them up, man.
About 10 or 12 years ago, there was a toy company that did, like, indie comic characters for action figures. And so they had, like, in the first wave, they had Scud the Disposable Assassin, the Max. Shit, who else did they have? I mean, there was... Oh, yeah, they had the Goon. Eric Powell's the Goon.
Okay.
They had Savage Dragon.
Now, I have two Savage Dragons, no, I'm sorry. Yeah, two Savage Dragons. There's the one that with the trench coat where he's all, you know, busted up and that got his police uniform. But those are from the actual Savage Dragon toy line.
Yeah. And this was all like, these were actually pretty small action figures. I really wanted to get them.
I've got a Max figure with black is not white is, from the McFarlane line. Of course, he's a beefy boy.
Oh yeah. I love the Max's design.
And I have, I think I know, like, who made those action figures, but I can't really think of it right now. Part of me thinks it's the same people that did the Jay and Silent Bob action figures.
That actually sounds right, yeah.
So, anyway, but I want to show you this. So, this is in this Art of Arthur Adams book. He got this one page. Here's page 22 and 23. He's showing the cover that he did for the Heroes for Hope comic book. So, if you don't know Heroes for Hope, it was during the time of the kind of the USA for Africa, the when the droughts in Africa had. The people in Ethiopia were starving, and they were trying to provide aid and stuff for Ethiopia, so they did this Heroes for Hope book.
Yeah.
Heroes for Hope is this like, mosaic collaboration of artists and writers to where they had this overall story, and it involved the X-Men, but every other page, or, like, every two pages are done by a different artist and writer. So, like you have people like I think Harlan Ellison did a page, but I know Stephen King did two pages. I think not Neil Gaiman, but Alan Moore did two pages, and you had like different artists in it. So the whole thing, it just goes from different creative team and back again. And so it's really kind of interesting. It's one of those books that, you know, like now when you go to look at it and think about getting it signed, so many of the artists that or writers that worked on it have passed away.
Right.
That
right.
It's like, damn, like it would be amazing to get this book like signed by everybody, but you know, it's not really going to happen, but still you could probably get half of the, like you could get that book just so covered in signatures that it would be like unreadable.
Right.
You
know? Right.
But anyway, let's go over here by Art Adams. And he says here, here we go. The beginning of my running towards you Wolverine, poses. When I first started buying comics, yeah, I was interested in this. And so he says, this is another cover that, that Annie assigned to me. She was always so generous to me. This comic was going to be a big deal for Marvel. They wanted a cover similar to the one used for X-Men 173 by Paul Smith. Paul Smith, fantastic writer, artist. He was so good in X-Men. She said, we don't want you to copy this, of course, but we want something like this. Then this led to the poster of Wolverine running towards you because they asked me to do another version for that. That poster image of Wolverine ended up on t-shirts and everywhere. Of course, we all know that.
Yeah, yeah.
So what I think about interesting about this, and it could be that he copied and then like cut out and then kind of pasted some stuff. But look at this, the page here that is fully drawn and shaded, but not inked.
Yeah.
So if we look at Colossus' arm here, right, it's got more of a bend in elbow than this one. This one's more straight.
Mm-hmm.
The Rock is completely different.
Totally different. Yep.
We still have the Rachel Phoenix behind him. Like she's almost pretty much in the exact same pose. Wolverine's pose is almost identical. He's got this arm that's slightly up. He doesn't have his claws out. Right, his face looks a little bit different. That could just be the difference between like the shading and stuff. Magneto is almost identical as well, but he's further down behind Wolverine.
Yep, his right arm is different too.
Yeah. So as we're looking at this, right, I'm thinking to myself, they're so close, like they're almost identical in appearance. Did he cut and paste and then just white out and redraw some stuff? Or did he redraw this entire thing by hand? Because it kind of makes me think he redrew the whole thing by hand, but they're so identical that it makes me wonder.
Yeah.
But then there's so many things that are just different enough that I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, even if he redrew it, then he could have, like, lightboxed it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, that was becoming real common practice around the time of that cover. That, like, I mean, that's why so much of it is so close, but then it's just little subtle things like an arm here, a pose there. I would go with it being lightboxed.
So look at this. Look at the hair on Wolverine's left arm.
Yeah.
The one he changed. Look how the hair comes here, but then here, his arm is completely different.
Yeah.
Even from the shoulder down. And then the shading on his right boot. Yeah, on the I don't know what you would call that, but the curvature, shadings is all different too. So it's like, it just kind of makes you wonder. But I mean, even it could still be lightboxed that way too. But it's just like, huh? And I was like, wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah,
Magneto's whole deal here. Even if he moved him down, he said the other arm is different. But like even the shading on the body is different too. Now, again, if he lightboxed, he could have just changed that. But like, even like the way he has a light angle around the crotch there, and the parts that he didn't shade, it's like, huh. And his cape is different too. It goes more up like an M here, and this one's more flared out.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, like it's, you look at it and it's like, they're so damn close in appearance that it was just like, if he just redid that, like if he just redrew it, like it's, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And
like, wow. But, I mean, Art Adams is just amazing anyway.
He is a very, very precise artist. Very much so a precisionist.
Look at that, bitch.
Yeah.
Dude, so Art Adams did the X-Men. He did the X-Men annuals with the crossover with X-Men and New Mutants when they went to Asgard, when Storm got... Maybe he became, like, Storm Thor because she had the other hammer that was made by Loki, which is so good. But he did those, and man, those stories are so good. And the artwork is fantastic. Everything about them is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember reading X-Men when that came out, and it's like the X-Men had the two giant size special editions. It was X-Men Alpha Flight, where they fought the people. It was the Paul Smith had drawn them, and they had fought the people that had been given the powers by these like Norse gods or something like that.
Right,
and
right.
And then and all that, and then from there they end up going to Asgard. Then the New Mutants are like, where are the X-Men? Like, what's going on? They're like, well, we got to go to Asgard too. But then when they traveled there, they got split up. And they also, like, didn't just get split up. They got split up in, like, time as well.
Right, right.
And it's just the whole thing was so cool. And you saw people, like, how they're, like, being in Asgard. They're like, oh, this is great. And like, and they were like, Wolverine, you'll really love this because you can just fight and you know, make it to the halls of Valhalla, where if you die, you get to fight some more. and it's that whole thing is so good. And then, of course, you get to see Wolverine beat Wolverine when Loki is convincing Storm that, you should take this. This is yours. And just rule. And Wolverine, is the one that's the voice of reason to stop her.
Nice.
So good. It's because she's, like, blasting with, like, lightning or whatever. And he's coming towards it. And, of course, he's just smoldering. His clothes are, like, almost completely burnt off of him. He's like, don't do it. He's lying to you. He's like, he's the god of lies. That's all he does. And then she like stops and looks around. That's also when Mirage got, became a Valkyrie and she got her Pegasus and got the ability to be able to see like all Valkyries do when someone's going to die. So really, really good stuff. So anyway,
yeah.
Where are we at right now?
We are 40 minutes in.
Okay. Interesting.
So yeah, we got some wiggle room.
So what were we going to talk about? There was a topic in particular that we were going to talk about.
I mean, we're 40 minutes in.
I mentioned the Usual Suspects thing. There was another movie thing I was going to talk about that we were started off with.
What was there?
And I can't remember what it was now. There was another movie thing that I was going to mention. Oh, and I know there was a community thing I think I was going to mention, right? Because we talked about Abed and the whole thing and all that stuff, and then...
Yeah, it was a bunch of stuff from 5th season that we've talked about this weekend.
Mm-hmm. But then there was something in particular, I was like, oh wait, I'll just save that till we come back on, because I wanted to talk about it on the show. It was just there, right on the tip of my brain, and then I lost it again. Oh! So... I was watching The Simpsons the other day. It was like a month ago. And it hit me that I was like, this joke, and it's a funny joke. I've always thought it was a funny joke. And then it hit me that I never got the joke. And then I finally get the joke, and I was like, I can't believe I never got the joke before until right now. Like, how did I miss that?
Right.
And I was like, wow, like now I feel stupid, but now I'm glad I got it because it really is funny.
Right, right.
So it's the Simpsons Halloween episode, and it's the one where Groundskeeper Willie, this is the one where he like fails throughout the whole thing. The way he becomes Freddy. Nightmare on Elm Street, Freddy, Groundskeeper Willie.
Yeah.
Okay.
I remember that.
So it's right. So, you know, the kids are like, we had a horrible dream. And they're like, I don't understand. He's like, okay, you had a horrible dream. I don't understand what that has to do anything to do with Groundskeeper Willie. Like, we didn't mention Groundskeeper Willie. And then they start telling the story. It's like, well, it all started, on the fourth month of the fourth day of the fourth month of like the something, whatever. Like we all gathered for the misprinted calendars. And the Homer was walking in, he's like, lousy smarch weather. And they just got the calendar there. And that's the one where, Milhouse's dad, they're talking and, Milhouse's dad, he's like, I for one would like to see, the school lunch menus like in advance. I don't like the idea of Milhouse having two spaghetti dinners in one day. So it's cold in the school and they walk in there and there's the thermostat and Homer sees this thermostat and it's got a post-it note on it. and it says, "Don't touch Willy." And Homer is like, goes in there, and he's like, because he's shivering, he's like, "Lousy smarch weather." And he looks at, ooh, and goes, "Don't touch Willy. Good advice." And he cranks it up, and then the boiler overheats and sets Willy on fire. I always thought that was funny. It, you know, it's funny. It's like, you know, he's like, "Don't touch Willy." He's like, "Oh, that's good advice," and everything, you know, but I'm still going to do it anyway.
Right, right.
I never got the joke until recently, and then I felt like such a fool.
The sign is telling him, "Don't touch Willy."
Like, "Don't touch your Willy."
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, "Oh, good advice." Now I'm like, I'm thinking he's like, that he's saying, "Oh yeah, don't touch this because Willy said so." And he's like, "Yeah, that's good advice, but I'm going to do it anyway." Someone else, they were saying like, "Don't touch Willy," as in the person. But no, it's saying like, "Don't touch yourself." And he's like, "Good advice." And I'm like, why did it take me so long to get that joke? Like it, that was like, I was like, wow. I mean, it was still funny, but now it's even funnier that I'm like, oh shit, I get it. That's really subtle. Well, it was subtle for me. And I was like, but that's good. That's really good. So another thing that I noticed, and I don't know if this was a, I don't know if this was always a planned thing or if it was one of those things they went back and changed later on. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they do that sometimes. Is I was watching Futurama, and in Futurama, it was the episode where with Fry's dog. Have you seen that one?
I haven't watched all the way through it, but man, I've heard people talk about it.
Okay, Fry's. Someone, did I send you the picture that someone sent me about, like, how to ruin somebody's, like, how to, like, double ruin somebody's day with one picture?
I feel like I've seen that one, but I don't think I saw it from you.
And it was a picture of, from Futurama outside of, the pizzeria. But instead of it Fry's dog, it was the dog from Full Metal Alchemist. And I was like, dude, I wanted to fucking cuss that person out. I was like, like, the Fry's dog thing doesn't really get me, right? But I was like, dude, why you gotta bring that up, man? Like, oh God, oh. So anyway, so it's the episode with Fry's dog and Fry's flashing back to, you know, when he was frozen and, you know, like, oh, he probably misses me so much, and like, who knows what happened to him? You know, like I when I left or whatever it was that Fry's thinking. So they flash back to that, and it shows him like, oh, what's the dog's name right now? Shit, I can't think of it of his name. But anyway, it flashes back to him leaving him outside the pizzeria, going over to the cryogenics place, and then, falling back into the cryogenics chamber. When he falls back and the chair goes back and he falls back, this shows the shadows, from underneath the desk. So, you know, the first time you saw him fall, in the first episode, he falls back and of course he gets frozen. Then later on, you find out that Nibbler was responsible for him falling into the chamber because we needed him to fight the brains, right? Evil brains.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they show that, when we find that out, when they do the flashback, there's Nibbler like under the desk. You see Nibbler's shadow. So when he falls backwards in the chair, you see Nibbler's shadow like from under the desk. In the episode with Fry's dog, when he flashes back to being frozen and he falls backwards in the chair, there are two shadows under the desk.
Hmm.
One is Nibbler. The other one is Fry from the brains episode where he went back in time to stop himself from being frozen. And he's about to strangle Nibbler until like he's like, "You came back in time to make sure I got frozen." He's like, "We don't have that technology." He goes, "But I do live a long time." Like, I don't, and so that's when Fry realized that he didn't go back in time, that he was always there. But because he did go back to try to stop Nibbler, when he flashes back, now it's his shadow and Nibbler's shadow under the desk.
Right, right.
Because as like Fry's trying to catch his balance, he like tips himself over and pushes himself. And now it's like, that's kind of cool. The fact that they kind of made sure that he was there. So anyway, I thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was one thing. I'm getting ready for work in the morning. You know, Futurama's on because it was coming on that early. And then I just happened to like just be looking at TV right that moment. And I just caught him like, "Hey, there's an extra shadow there."
Right, right.
Yeah. I know there's all other, like, movie stuff that I can talk about, that I can't really specifically think of, like, a certain thing right now, but I do want to mention one thing because we mentioned it. I mentioned it yesterday.
Yeah.
And I didn't get a chance to follow up on it anymore.
You did say you had some kind of question for me.
It was the Planet of the Apes, the new Planet of the Apes series, right?
Yeah.
So have you watched all of those or most of them or anything?
Not all of them. I watched like the first three during a family road trip. So I really liked them personally. That's just me.
You have not seen the most recent trailer then, have you?
No.
Okay. So I'm going to pull up the most recent trailer because when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's cool. I was like, that's kind of neat. I don't want to say I was impressed, but I was like, oh, I like what they're doing here. Even though I haven't seen all of them, I wish you want to go and watch them all now because I'm like, I like what they're doing here. That's really kind of awesome. And I don't want to say I got to be a part of this, but I got to be in on this. Let me get out of this here. And I know there's a trailer thing on here so we can watch it. And then, and other people are like, what the hell, man? I don't need you to tell me, like, you know, about trailers or whatever. I'm like, you know, it's my podcast. So you will listen to every single word I have to say. If I say, just go to the search settings, right?
I'm not totally sure.
As a search. Yeah. Okay, yes, no. Son of a bitch!
Just go back to the drop-down bar. It's like four down.
Ah, good. That's all the other one. Ah, oh, Fist of North Star. I want to watch that, and then it turns out it's not available for streaming anymore. it's my fault for waiting so long.
Super Vlogs Chanel.
Planet of the Apes. I forget the full title of it.
Well, yeah, because they do the kind of thing that, like, we make fun of. It's like, yes, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Morning of the Planet of the Apes, Afternoon of the Planet of the Apes.
Second Breakfast of the Planet of the Apes.
Early Brunch with the Planet of the Apes.
I think this is it, Dawn. No, that's 2014, so that's not it. Is it Rise?
No.
It's not War.
Nah.
It sure as hell ain't that damn Tim Burton one.
Shout out to Tim Burton one.
That Tim Burton one is shite, dude. Well, have you seen it?
I mean, I've heard that it's shite.
Oh, it is straight up shite. It doesn't make any sense. It's got a great cast, though. It has an incredible cast, but man, they do not... they are not used to, like, the best of your ability. Plus, I mean, Mark Wahlberg is an astronaut. I can suspend my disbelief. You know, I can believe a man can fly. I can believe a rich man can beat up a superhero from outer space, but I cannot believe Mark Wahlberg could be an astronaut.
Even without it being released, would it be in this list?
It should be just as a trailer. If not, I'll have to leave this and go to something else.
YouTube.
Yeah.
Is it Planet of the Humans?
No, it's still Apes. Behind a Planet of the Apes. That's that documentary. Oh, there's the good one right there. Conquest. Was that say Planet of the Lesbians? Oh, okay.
This is Planet of the Apes. Oh, the green one. Yeah, Planet of the Lesbians.
I mean, you know, on the surface, it seemed like that would probably be kind of an interesting planet to go to, but then at the same time, like, no.
Just lots of scissoring and domestic abuse.
I mean, dude, that would be absolutely hell for the two of us. Like, you know, we would get treated like shit. Like, no matter what we did, like, no matter how, here we go, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. No matter, like, how well we tried to do shit, it would not be well received. All right, so let's do this one right here. I gotta add this fucking channel just to watch a damn trailer. Are you kidding me, dude?
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, huh?
And I've got the power, the sound still down low. Cause I mean, that part's not that important. I just want you to see it. Because I really like what they're doing here. All right, so here we are.
Sweet.
Totally. It's a bird. It's a bird.
Yeah. Just a bird.
The bird. You and I both have the same feelings about, like, CGI and, like, its overusage. But, like, if this is something like this, like, the Planet of the Apes, and, like, the way that they're doing, like this untouched part of the Earth now with things, this is, like, how you do it, but, you know, this is kind of how you do it. Will you get that fucking thing out of the way? So this Memorial Day. Okay, so check this out, right? So we've gone through the whole thing from when Caesar starts to gain intelligence to then he starts to fight for independence.
Right.
And then gets the other animals together. And then when the apes set up their own society away from humans because they know that humans are going to do what humans do, which is destroy themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they're like, well, we destroy ourselves, but we still want this land. And then we're going to take it away from you creatures. Now with this movie, we see that the apes are the dominant species. The humans are savages that are Neanderthals.
Yeah, yeah.
In packs. This is where the original movie from the 70s picked up.
Yeah.
When Colonel Testo was like, they've taken it complete full circle. And I was like, that's awesome. Like, they took the series as far as they could with that. And then they're like, okay, and now we've got to bring it back around to where we started from.
Yeah.
Full circle. Now this is the future that you all knew was coming. And here it is. I'm like,
I was always very impressed with it.
I was like, that's nice.
I saw, like, I want to say the first three. And maybe it was only the first two, but, like, I was very, very impressed and really enjoyed it. But you could see that they were building up to setting it up in conjunction with the original film.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's cool that they're now to that point of doing that. It's like, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I thought that was really nice. And they're just starting off with, like, we've gone to the point where, like, we don't need to show, like, the full fall of the humans. Everybody knows it, that they've doomed themselves. Now we're going to show where apes have now kind of taken over, you know, that... They've taken over the society and to where, like, we're no longer hiding in the shadows. We're here.
Yeah.
And this is our planet now. So, yeah. Oh, my goodness. You see that, right?
See what part?
The background. I know you have to see that.
The character?
Yeah.
Yeah, who the hell is that? That's familiar.
It's Nova. It's like the Nova. Yeah. And I was like, oh, wow. I did not know Nova was going to be in the Marvel site. But, I mean, I kind of hate the fact that they kind of spoiled it by putting him there. But I'm like, dude, because they had the Nova Corps, which are one thing. But, like, this is the full-on, like, this is like a Richard Rider Nova. I'm like, okay, word. Hmm. So, huh.
Interesting.
Yep. All right, well, you know what?
Yeah.
Well, that's a video game, that's right. my name is Turk182.
Yeah, well, I'm Akomi.
And we thank you for being with us today, whatever day this is, and listening to our podcast. We had a lot of fun. And, we kind of had a topic of sorts for this one, but then we just kind of, like, just ran with it as we do.
Yeah.
We zen this podcast. We straight up zen this podcast.
This is what they call a zen podcast.
Yeah, zen recording. We do that. We perfected it. It's mine. I created it. So this is us, this is you, and we will see you again next time.
Later, y'all.
Zang, yo.
All right there, folks, that was Our Moms Think We're Funny. Let's give them a hand.